Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the podcast. This is the fourth and final episode in my series on decentralization. But really, this series has always been about something broader, which is flexibility in design. In episode one, we explored why real innovation isn't picking up a centralized or decentralized architecture for your systems. It's about building systems that can move between those models when the environment changes. In episode two, I looked at the costs of that flexibility, because as much as I think it's a fantastic idea, it's not, you know, without penalty, you might say. You've got to deal with the costs of redundancy, coordination, and thinking through operational maturity. In episode three, I'm challenging the assumption that, you know, centralization, that infinite scalability always means you're being successful. Because frankly, if your systems can't flex, then what's really efficient today is actually turning into something that's really fragile for situations that change in tomorrow. Now, in this final episode in the series, we're going to get to the part that often gets skipped over until it's a little bit too late, and that's governance. Not the kind that lives in policy binders, but this is the kind that actually determines whether your system can adapt safely when people, requirements, or risks shift. And again, just to be clear, this isn't an argument for replacing everything with decentralized tech. Most enterprises are starting from centralized models for a reason. It's familiar, it's efficient, it's how most of our current systems are built. Face it, control is very comfortable. But the question I'm asking in this series is, well, what happens when you do need to flex? Can you shift how control is managed without rewriting your stack or breaking trust? And if the answer is consistently no, then what you have isn't just a centralized system, it's a fragile system. And some of that's where your governance is coming in, not about choosing sides, but about making sure you have room to maneuver on purpose. And let's talk about why governance is what makes that possible. So governance matters, especially when you're trying to move between centralized and decentralized models, because even if you want flexibility, if your systems don't have a clear way to delegate authority or resolve conflicts or adapt when the rules change, you don't have flexibility, you have risk. And most enterprise leaders are perfectly sensible about being cautious about this. Decentralization without structure can look a lot like chaos. People worry about conflicting policies, slower decisions, and unclear accountability. And if you've ever seen a federation fall apart because someone left the organization or changed their mind, you know that this concern isn't hypothetical. But you know, that's not an argument against decentralization. It's an argument for governance that actually enables the distributed control to work. Because if governance is what gives you confidence to loosen your grip and almost democratize decision makings, that's what's going to, you know, give you that flexibility without losing the coherence of what your ultimate goal is for your organization. Now, think about how this plays out in identity systems. You know, maybe you want to support partner access, but there's no shared trust framework for revocation. Maybe your system is ready to adapt verifiable credentials, but you don't have alignment on who gets to issue them or what revoking that trust looks like. Maybe your organization is moving into new markets, but data residency and legal requirements require you shift the control of where the data is and whatnot to do it really fast. In each case, you know, technology actually wasn't the blocker for any of these. It's the absence of a shared decision-making structure, the rules that help different actors collaborate without stepping on each other's toes or their keyboards, as the case may be. Now, this is where we need to flip this script a little bit. You know, governance isn't going to slow you down if it's done right. It's going to make your flexibility safe. Okay, now, you may be thinking, but I already have an identity governance administration team, an IGA team. Isn't that what they do? IGA is super important. It gives you policy enforcement. It gives you approval workflows, role modeling, audit trails. But most IGA tools are built to operate inside centralized environments. They assume a single system of record, a known set of users, a consistent model for ownership. And what I'm talking about here is more strategic governance, rules of engagement for when control is distributed, for when trust is shared, for when multiple parties need to coordinate identity decisions across boundaries. It's like that plan you have when you have several different IGA implementations in your organization because there's different areas with different needs and doing different things. So yes, IGA is part of the solution, but if your architecture is becoming more modular, your user base is becoming more dynamic, or your regulatory surface is more complex, you're going to need governance that extends beyond the walls of your current directory-like system. And if you're on an IGA team, I'm telling you, this is your moment. You're already so close to the problems, you can help define the structures that let your organization scale trust more safely, both, you know, inside and with their partners. You can help build an elegant, modular, protocol-driven system, and it could be the best one in the world. But if no one knows who gets to change the rules or settle a dispute, your flexibility to be able to do all this won't last very long. So we're starting to see real effort in the identity world to take governance seriously, not just as a compliance checkbox, but as a foundation for flexibility. Now, at the Trust Over IP Foundation, for example, working groups are developing governance frameworks that align legal, business, and technical trust. Their stacks don't just define, you know, how credentials work. They define how the whole ecosystem works, who gets to participate, how disputes are resolved, what happens when someone breaks the rules. In the Internet Engineering Task Force, the ITF, the SCIT working group, SCIT standing for Supply Chain Integrity, Transparency, and Trust, is working on supply chain integrity, not just by signing data, by defining who can issue, verify, and revoke claims, and under what rules. It is trust, and it's designed to evolve. We're also seeing wallet ecosystems confront this head-on. It's not enough to say the cryptography works. You need to know who can issue a credential, what revocation looks like, and how participants are onboarded or removed. Because without that, you don't have operability, you have fragmentation. And that's not just a standards problem. I mean, in enterprises today, the same questions come up. Who owns access policies across a joint venture? Can a local subsidiary revoke a federated identity? What happens when a regional partner needs to be cut off today? If your system doesn't answer these questions up front, you're going to end up centralizing again just out of fear of what's going wrong, but not necessarily because that's the best response to how you handle these questions. Governance generally isn't something you want to add on later. It's something you really should be designing into the system so that shared control becomes manageable. So what does all this mean for the systems that you're building? Well, whether you're working on identity and access management, consumer IAM, cloud strategy, data sharing, identity wallets, you're already facing moments where control needs to be distributed. At which point the question isn't, you know, do we support decentralization? It's, can we manage shared control without getting stuck in some weird problem? So here's what good governance might look like in these scenarios, right? Good governance would look like something that defines who sets the rules and who can change them. It would support clear, enforceable onboarding and offboarding. It makes revocation explicit and respected across all the participants. And finally, it creates accountability without collapsing everything back into a central authority. And just like we do in org charts or financial reporting, it's balancing autonomy with alignment. Now, you can delegate identity issuance to partners if you've defined what they can issue and how disputes are handled. You can let business units manage their own access policies if there's a shared understanding of what suspended access really means. And maybe, and most importantly, you can evolve the system over time without losing control or clarity, because good governance isn't static either. It's what allows your systems to flex safely as your reality changes. So here's the final takeaway from this series. Decentralization isn't the goal. Flexibility is. And since we're already trending so hard on the side of centralization, I'm trying to educate you a little bit more as to what I'm thinking about when decentralization is the other side we need to lead into. Flexibility isn't an abstract concept. It's a real strategic capability. And to shift between centralized and decentralized models as your business, your users, and your regulatory environments involved, that's a big deal. So over these last four episodes, we've looked at what it takes, the ability to shift in engineering meets economics, the cost of that flexibility in how decentralized are you willing to pay for, the way we measure success in just redefining success, and now the structure to make it all work, which is governance. And if there's one message that you might want to take forward from all of this, it's your architecture can't change if your governance can't support it. Because technology is largely already there, and what's missing is agreement. Who gets to decide when control changes and how trust is shared over time? And that brings us to the end of this four-part series, but there is so much more ahead. Starting next week, I'll be back with weekly episodes covering a broader range of identity topics, including verifiable credentials, fraud models, interoperability issues, privacy challenges, and other places where strategy meets infrastructure. So if you work in identity, IAM, product, strategy, or anywhere in technology, stick around. And thank you again so much for listening. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.